I took some time last weekend to look at some of the articles and some of the commentary that came out about a year ago when the GVC, you know, that great virus crisis, was just beginning. And the media was full of negative commentary. But I also noticed that in my regular podcasts, my guests and I gave measured commentary using our perspective, the perspective we'd gained from many, many years in the market. And the result was that we were circled by a pack of hangry housing bears. They were all confidently growling that the local property market was going to slump, house prices would fall by the largest margin on record. Of course, they were fueled at the time by some crazy forecasts from the banks. And of course, there was also the perennial negative perma bears. They were praying for the mother of all housing depressions. Now, the media is full of positive news today, so different from a year ago, and most of the bears have gone back hibernating into their caves. But there are some still out there telling us this upturn in our property market is just temporary. Currently, we've got an embarrassment of riches with our economy and our property market surging ahead. And while much of the commentary is about the micro factors, you know, what's happening on the ground in our property markets, I like to regularly get together with property commentator Pete Wargent in these big picture podcasts to look at the macroeconomic factors, the big picture factors that are affecting our economy and our property markets, because I hope this is going to help give you some clarity about what the future holds so you can make better investment and business decisions. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Our property markets don't work in isolation, so I believe it's good to regularly have a look at the big picture, the macroeconomic factors, not just Australia's economy, but the world economy. And who better to discuss this with than Pete Wargent, a lifelong student of and commentator on our economy. Hello, Pete.
Hi, Michael. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Now, since we spoke last month, Australia's economic recovery has continued to unfold. More jobs are being created now. Property markets keep surging. So while I'd like to get your thoughts on our property markets, and I'd be interested to hear what you think about what the Reserve Bank's going to do and APRA is going to do, if they're going to interfere to slow them down. First, let's start with the big picture, because that's what these regular big picture podcasts we're doing are about. And then we'll dig into the more into the housing markets. So Pete, let's start with March has come and gone, and there was no fiscal cliff. Remember how the property pessimists people were worried about we'd fall off the cliff due to the many deferred home loans? You know, the banks gave a temporary relief for those people that were impacted by COVID and allowed them to defer their repayments. But the latest figures from APRA have shown most of them are repaying their debts now.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that risk has come and gone. The APRA figures only actually run to the end of February, and by then there was only about $14 billion of loans remaining on deferral. I think of the housing loans, it was about $11.7 billion. But I mean, if you just look at the sheer speed of people exiting or switching back to repayment, there was about $22 billion in February. So as we speak now today, there's probably very, very little left. And I think some people are sort of clinging on to this idea that as the JobKeeper payment program ends, then maybe there'll be some rising unemployment. But there's probably about half a dozen reasons why they just won't have the same impact that people think. When it comes to mortgage defaults, I mean, rising prices really take away the willingness of a lot of people to default anyway. The banks have really acted as shock absorbers. But the other thing, and no doubt we'll come on to speak about this, is the sheer number of jobs and job vacancies that the economy is creating, especially at a time when there is no immigration. There's probably never been a better time than to look for work than now. And of course, we've got record low mortgage rates. So I don't think the big sort of fiscal cliff or the mortgage defaults, they're just not going to happen for a range of reasons.
Sure. So our banking system sounded stable, but it's a pity there's still those negative Nellies out there. They created stress for people who listened to them last year. And I feel sorry for those who listened to them. Some of them may have sold up, but others just missed out on the profit-making opportunities the market had to offer. But they're still out there. They're going to remain. But in the meantime, though, our property markets are surging. Pete, the fastest house price growth in 32 years nationally has fueled stronger than expected stamp duty revenues. It's also made us feel wealthier, especially for anyone who owns a home, so that more jobs, home values going up. This is good for our economy and for our spending, Pete.
Yeah, in fact, household wealth it took a temporary knock with share markets down and property markets down last year, but that's rebounded very quickly and household wealth's now at a record high. I think an interesting thing about this property market rebound, it hasn't really been driven by investors. You know, there was a lot of talk in the previous cycle, it's all the greedy investors bidding up prices, but it hasn't been that at all. It's been first-time buyers and upgraders that have driven everything. I mean, so far, so good on the economic recovery. Employment's at a record high. Job vacancies are at a record high. So it's a strange dynamic without immigration, but Australia's in a very good position, comparatively speaking, now.
Well, when we feel good, when we feel secure in our jobs, Pete, when we feel wealthy, we tend to spend more. And this is going to help grow our economy. It's an upward spiral, which is good, but it's also going to have a flow-on effect for the government budgets. We know our governments took on more debt. They tried to help us through the coronavirus crisis, but it now seems that the state government budgets are a collective $7 billion better off than expected because of the house price recovery, because the state governments not only get stamp duty, but they also get a portion of the GST, Pete.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we've spent much of the past decade with governments and oppositions arguing about the return to surplus, and we near enough got there in the period pre-COVID. And of course, the COVID lockdown effectively blew the budget out of the water, massive deficit. But I think what we've seen previously is that if you can get the unemployment rate down, then that has a twin effect. It means there's fewer people claiming unemployment benefits and, of course, more income tax. So I think the budget will eventually get back towards being in balance, but it's not considered to be that important these days that a budget gets back into surplus. I think, especially with interest rates so low these days on government borrowing, I think there'll be a steady return, but I don't think the government will be rushing back to surplus anytime soon.
I think the government's learned a little bit about how to run a country. In fact, many of the governments around the world have. Maybe we're not ever allowed to have a recession again if you can spend your way out of it. But we can discuss the economics of that another time. I think one of the interesting statistics that came out over the last month was also the latest home loan figures. And while they were down a little bit, but from record highs, they showed that investors are now back in the market. And interestingly, particularly in Victoria.
Yeah. I mean, there was a bit of talk about housing lending falling in February. But as you said, that's in context, that's falling a tiny bit from a record high. The other thing is February is a pretty short month and the seasonal adjustments don't always pick that up perfectly. I think, yes, you're right. The key thing to watch there is that the supply of first home buyers is going to get exhausted eventually because at any given point in time, there's only so many first home buyers with a deposit ready to buy. That is going to now start tilting, I believe, towards investors. But investor lending is probably only about half of what it was at the peak around 2016. So there's a long way for that to run back. And yes, lending to investors was up 4 or 5% in February. But I think we'll see a lot more of that over the remainder of the year.
Sure. Well, for a period of time, unusually, as you said, first home buyer lending was higher than investor lending, but that's because of those grants. And as you've suggested, it's been brought forward. So we always find after that there's a lull, there's a lag as all these first home buyers' desires have been brought forward in the market a bit. But investor lending has usually been in the order of 25 to 30% of all lending. Sure, during the peak of the boom in 2016-17, it got too high, but it's on the low side now, closer to 19-20% of all loans. So there is still some way to go for investors to get back in the market. But as you said, this is really now homeowners buying their homes, but a lot of people are borrowing to renovate or upgrade their homes.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's worth pointing out, actually. The record high lending for housing in the first part of this year, it wasn't all people buying homes or investing. There's a lot of construction lending because of the government stimulus package that was called home builder. There was also a lot of renovation lending as well for similar reasons. So it's not all home buyers or investors getting into debt. There's some very valid reasons there for housing lending. And as we know, there's been a huge surge of refinancing over the last few years because so many people were paying 6% mortgage rates or maybe 5%, but now they can refinance down to 2 or 3. So there's obviously been a lot of refinancing going on as well.
Sure. Well, in today's low interest rate environment, while many of us were taught by our parents that debt is bad, I believe that good debt, debt against appreciating assets, is really an asset. Having debt at 2% or 3% when your properties are going to go up 5 or 6%, nothing like the 19, 20% that some banks are even suggesting. But if they're going to go up and you're getting rental yields that cover your mortgage repayments, having good debt's a good thing to use to leverage going into this cycle. But you were talking a minute ago about building and renovations, and February saw another big upsurge in dwelling approvals. They leapt 21% in the month, up 20% in the year. And of course, this has been fueled by Home Builder, which has since ended. But that's also going to now leave a great pipeline of work for the construction industry. And I think we've got to remember that Home Builder wasn't really meant for first-time buyers. It was to help the building industry and keep jobs going.
Yeah, it's a very different dynamic from what we saw in the boom from 2012. That was all about high-rise apartments. A lot of Chinese investors from the Chinese mainland were buying off the plan, and that just fueled this big surge of high-rise apartments, especially in Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane. This time around, it's the opposite, really. It's all detached housing. So detached house approvals, well, essentially the highest level ever in the private sector. So a huge surge there as the government would have hoped for. But apartment approvals, it's a very noisy numbers series because you get these big tower blocks approved all in 1 month and then there's nothing in the next month. But generally, apartment approvals are way, way down on where they were 7 or 8 years ago. And that kind of makes sense. There's not as many international students around. There's no international tourism. And there's been a general shift away from those CBD towers and density this year. So there's lots and lots of house building going on, not so much in the apartment space. So I think that's a pretty healthy dynamic. And I think that one of the things that's a bit different is houses can be built these days in maybe just a few months, whereas apartments can take years, you know, 2 or 3 years to be brought to the market. So we'll see the supply response will hit the market much quicker. And I think things will calm down a bit in the building sector probably as the year rolls on.
Sure. Well, the lack of apartment building is going to be helpful down the track because that's where all the vacancies are, the rental vacancies, the drop in value. Some rents in the CBD towers of Melbourne and Sydney have dropped 30% or so. So it would be a pretty brave developer getting going with that again. One of the challenges with this construction boom, the rampant demand in renovation and home building sector, it's hitting customers with delays. It's also pushing up prices of material. There are international supply chain issues as well. What this means, Pete, is that construction costs are going up. And that'll be interesting when we look at its effect on inflation, because there's actually quite a weighting of construction in that CPI basket of goods that the Reserve Bank looks at.
So that's a good point. So there's definitely tradies are very busy at the moment. It's difficult to get tradies to quote low for work at the moment. So you'll see the price of materials and labour going up. But I think if you look at the job vacancies figures as well, there's been quite a surge in job vacancies in things like mining and construction. And in fact, there's already some skill shortages because we don't have immigration, but that's mainly in the lower paid roles at the moment, like hospitality and accommodation and food services. So in terms of what it means for policy, I think you're right. I think there will be some inflation, but the Reserve Bank has said, well, it's just said it over and over and over again, it's not going to hike interest rates until inflation is sustainably back at 2 to 3%. And that probably means rising wages. We probably need to see unemployment of 4% or less. Maybe 3 to 4% might be where they're looking. So we've still got quite a way to go. Even though we've got record high job vacancies, I think it's still some way away before inflation becomes something that's on the table.
Sure. Well, really, the job creation has surprised most economists. 90% of the jobs lost over COVID have been recovered. And as you keep saying, job vacancies the highest they've been for a long time. Of course, as we've already mentioned, with JobKeeper now ending, there may be some sectors of the market that are going to have some concerns. But in general, we're creating lots of jobs and there's work out there for people who are looking for it. Now, right at the beginning of our chat, I hinted about the forecasts for housing prices moving forward. But now that we've got a bigger picture view, let's just have a quick look at what's happening in our property markets and CoreLogic's latest figures for the end of March, released at the beginning of April, showed that property markets were surging all around Australia, regional Australia, as well as capital cities, even though now the capital cities are growing a bit faster than regional Australia. Well, it's surging everywhere other than those apartment towers that we mentioned before. But boy, did the ANZ Bank forecast get a lot of publicity. It predicted home values on a national level could rise as strong as 17% this year. And then they suggested they dropped to 6% in 2022. Boy, what a turnaround from all those pessimistic bank forecasts about a year ago. But before I get your thoughts on that, I'd also like to just mention that in that report, ANZ senior economist Felicity Emmett said she expected APRA, the Australian Prudential Regulation Authority, would introduce macro-prudential controls to slow the housing market. Well, we know that since then, APRA's chairman Wayne Byers came out and said, no, that's not our problem. Our responsibility is financial stability, not soaring house prices. So what are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, well, I suppose your first point on the turnaround in forecasts is probably, that probably tells you most of what you need to know about people's ability to predict prices over a 12-month period. If you can go from some predictions of huge losses to huge gains in the space of a few months. You know, if you look at what's happened to mortgage rates, we haven't seen mortgage serviceability at such a comfortable level. Well, it's probably in 45 years, you know. So I think it's difficult to predict over short time periods, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if prices rise by a quarter to a third over the coming few years, simply because mortgage rates have fallen so much. That's just going to lead to an asset repricing upwards, and that's pretty logical and rational. I think on the macro prudential tools, you know, the media has jumped on this at the first sign of rising prices, but you know, speaking to people around the traps, it just doesn't seem very likely. It's only just recently that APRA and the Council of Financial Regulators were encouraging banks to actually get out there and lend. It'd be very unusual for them to suddenly turn around and say, please stop. I think this interest-only lending isn't a big issue right now. In fact, interest-only loans are the lowest we've ever seen as a share of the loan stock. So I think if they were going to do anything, that the areas they'd be looking at, investors using high loan-to-value ratios and high debt-to-income ratios. But I mean, that's probably something to look at in a year's time. I just don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
Sure. I think our housing market will slow a bit. I can't see the sort of price growth we've had in the first quarter of this year continuing on, but that's going to happen more for natural reasons. So I'm not suggesting prices are going to drop, but growth is going to slow and stop some of those speculative media headlines. But having said that, it's really only 3 months into this boom, so to speak. And if you look at it, prices are really only just above where they were at the last peak. So the market's just doing its normal cyclical behavior, Pete, but people are getting scared by it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, supply and demand is what changes prices in housing markets. We've got record high house building approvals, so that will start to have an impact in 3 or 4 months' time as those new houses hit the market. There'll be more sellers looking to lock in some of their gains from the last cycle. So things will naturally steady down a bit. Prices won't fall, I don't think, but at least it will just disperse the buyers because at the moment we've got very low stock. I think a lot of this stuff looks really obvious in hindsight. The government put in place a massive stimulus package, and as it transpired, COVID just wasn't such a big deal in Australia. So all of those dollars are stuck at home for the time being, and it's a bit of a pressure cooker because people can't travel overseas on holiday. They probably don't want to spend too much on a petrol car that'll be obsolete in 5 or 10 years. So property is an obvious place for people to invest their money, whether it's in renovations or upgrades or buying a rental property. So I think ANZ's forecasts are pretty bullish, but I don't think they'll be too far off the mark. By the end of the year, we'll see some pretty strong growth.
I concur with what you said. I think this is a cycle of upgraders. We're seeing tenants being annoyed now with the sort of accommodation they've got. So they've got lots of choices, so they're upgrading their tenancies. We're seeing other tenants upgrading to become first home buyers. There's lots of established home buyers who are now wanting that Zoom room and a bigger garage for a gym. They're wanting more security. So they're upgrading either their accommodation or for better locations. Others are just moving a bit further away to different locations. So it is really very much a cycle of upgrading and feeling good about yourself. And, hey, we got through this. We actually deserve a new car, a new jet ski, a holiday home. So this is the beginning of, it really is still the beginning of a new cycle, a new business cycle. I know once a year we get together at Wealth Retreat on the Gold Coast. And this year, it's very likely that you're going to be appearing virtually as opposed to in person because you're stuck in the United Kingdom. But I know you've got a lot out of Wealth Retreat personally, but I know also that the delegates, the people who came along, got a lot out of your opinions. So we're going to have some fun on the Gold Coast in only a couple of months' time.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'll miss out on the golf this year, but it's well worth it. I've been many years in a row, as you know. I'd never miss the Wealth Retreat if I can avoid it, because it's such a it's not just the content; it's also the networking, the mindset, the people that you meet, the businesses that get founded. It just really serves a very strong purpose to meet with like-minded people.
Yeah, and plan the rest of your life. So it's not really a property seminar. Well, Pete, we'll get back together regularly for these big picture podcast recordings. But if people want to keep in contact with you in between, because I know you have a lot of regular content about property, the economy and the share market, how do they best find you?
Easiest place. My daily blog is Pete Wargent Blogspot. You'll find it easily enough on Google. So yeah, as you said, a daily blog there with all of my musings and thoughts on what's going on.
Now, obviously, people like podcasts if they're listening to this podcast. So you've got your own podcast, which is on a different topic. Tell us a little bit about that one, please.
Yeah, I've got a podcast called the Low Rates, High Returns podcast that I do with Stephen Moriarty. And that's a different subject. It's for people interested in investing in stocks and shares. So it's a bit different from the property stuff. And if you're interested in more of an income focus or passive income, then and you're interested in stocks, then that's a great place to go. Low rates, high returns.
I'll leave a link for all of that in our show notes. Look forward to catching up with you again real soon, Pete. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks, Michael.
In a minute, I'm going to share with you my mindset moment. But before, I'd like to follow on some of the discussion I had with Pete and give you a chance to get to know Pete a bit better and get to know me a bit better, because I want to give you an opportunity to take advantage of the current property markets by spending some time with me and allowing me to be part of your team and your personal mentor. I want you to spend 5 powerful days on the Gold Coast with me at Wealth Retreat 2021. Now, this year it's on June 12th to 16th, and we've booked the room. And we're going to put it on. We missed out last year because of COVID. And we're going to spend 5 intensive days with Dr. Andrew Wilson, with Ken Race, with Simon Kirstenmacher, with Pete Wargent, with, you know, Pete's going to be appearing virtually because he's stuck in the United Kingdom, with Mark Creedon, with a host of business, property, tax, finance, share market experts. And we're going to be in a small group environment, so we're going to be able to help you plan the next 5 years of your life. You see, Wealth Retreat isn't really a property seminar. It's actually about you. It's my exclusive retreat designed for anyone who wants to accomplish even bigger things in their life. Some people will have hit a plateau, some would have had some stumbling blocks in 2020, and others are just wanting to keep powering along. And there are some great attendees already booked in. I know that more than half the place is already taken, but I know these people want to make a big shift, and I want to help you make a big shift and take advantage of the property markets, the economy, the business opportunities that are going to arise moving forward. So if this sounds like you, I'd love to make your dreams come true. You're going to get my personal insights, personal feedback on your plans, on your goals, and you're going to receive elite mentorship that's going to take your life to the next level to make things truly outstanding. Now, I know that sounds melodramatic, but having done this now for 15, 16 years, I know how it works, how well it works. So there's no excuses this year. It's the beginning of a new property cycle, a new business cycle, a new economic cycle. So why don't you join us and get mentorship, masterminding, networking? Hey, you're also going to have some fun as we spend 5 days together on the Gold Coast. So go to wealthretreat.com.au. By the way, you can't just book in. Anyone who wants to come has a one-on-one chat with me so I can make sure it's right for you. And to be blunt, that you're right for the Wealth Retreat community. There's going to be a link in the show notes, but just go to wealthretreat.com.au and spend 5 days on the Gold Coast with us. And for many people, it's over a long weekend, so you won't even miss much work. And let's together plan the next 5 years of your life to make them the best 5 years of your life.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I'd like to show you some happiness hacks. Look, if you've been following my blogs, especially the Rich Habits, Poor Habits ones, watched my videos with Tom Cawley, or been listening to these podcasts, you know that your brain is like a computer operating system. It means that you can program it to choose what you're wanting to choose, to look for what you're looking for. The reticular activating system in your brain will search out for things, including happiness. But unfortunately, a lot of people are worriers and they're not as happy as they deserve to be. So I'd like to just share with you a couple of happiness hacks. Now, worrying about money, interestingly, is one of the biggest causes of unhappiness. But once you realize that no amount of money is going to make you happy unless you suddenly shift your mindset into gratitude and abundance mode, you'll never be happy. We've heard those stories about those very rich people who are still miserable, haven't we? So my suggestion to you is to turn on that part of your brain that is going to be appreciative and grateful. So every morning, think of something that you're grateful for. At the end of each night before you go to sleep, think of the good things that have happened to you during the day, and your mind will be tuned and looking for more happiness. Another mindset hack is worrying is really a waste. It's a misuse of your imagination because you're really just imagining, aren't you? You're worrying about what could happen in the future. You're better off using your energy doing something you can control and accept what's going to happen rather than worrying about things, because your expectations determine your experiences. Expect the best out of your day and you're going to usually get it. And interestingly, most of the things you worry about are not going to occur or won't be as bad as you expect them. In fact, most things that go wrong won't last. Ask yourself if whatever you're worrying about now, whatever went wrong, is still going to matter in a year's time. If the answer is no, then maybe it doesn't matter or doesn't matter that much today. Another mindset hack is being optimistic. You should be optimistic. You've heard me say before that optimists do much, much better than pessimists in this world. Now, being optimistic isn't actually being naive. It's not saying, no, nothing can go wrong. It's understanding that things can go wrong. But if you expect them to go right, you're going to find all the things that can go right, and you're going to be heading in the right direction. I think it's also important to understand that no matter how bad things seem at that moment in time, this time will pass and your life will be good again. So if you're having some challenges at the moment, remember the wise King Solomon had inscribed on his ring, "This too shall pass." It made sure that he wasn't too pessimistic when things were bad, but also that he wasn't overly optimistic when things were good. Understand then that this will pass. I think another mindset hack to make you happier is choose your battles wisely. Unless it's really worth fighting for, walk away for it and spare your energy. How often have you been cross with somebody, your life partner, your spouse, one of your kids? And the question is, are you going to leave them? Is this enough to break the relationship? And if it isn't, then is it really worth spending so much time being angry and cross? Just move on with it. So that's one of the other mind hacks, the happiness hack, choose your battles wisely. Another one I'd like to share with you is have the courage to say no to things that you don't want to do. That's going to allow you to say yes to things that you do want to do. Putting yourself first doesn't mean that you're putting everyone else last. Do the things that are right for you without doing the wrong things by anybody else. And the last thing I'd like to suggest is that regardless of what your experiences have been in the past, it's not too late to start backing yourself. Be courageous. Be courageous in your decision making. Stand by your choices and never look back. So, in summary, your brain is a computer operating system. Well, it's like a computer operating system, and you can program it to be happy or not. The choice is yours. Well, I trust you got some benefit from my big picture chat with Pete Wargent. And if you did, and you know somebody else who'd get benefit from it, why not tell them about the Michael Yardney podcast? There's also a share button on every podcast app. Or you can tell the world, like Dana77 did via Apple Podcasts when she left a 5-star review. She or he, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't assume anything. And if you leave a podcast review, and I read it out, just email me, michael@metropole.com.au, and I'd love to gift you one of my books, as I'm going to for DHannah77 via Apple Podcasts, who left a 5-star review saying, educational and easy to digest advice. I've been listening to this podcast for 3 months as I'm looking for Australia-based advice. There's a lot of podcasts I've been listening to before American-based. Really enjoyed the last episode, Never Break the 10-meter Rule Investing in Real Estate, as it rang true to me. Well, thanks for leaving that kind review. Now, if you want to catch up with me in between the twice-weekly podcasts, just look for me on social media, Michael Yardney, or join our private Facebook group. Just go to Facebook and look for the Property Update Facebook group. And if you want even more information, go to podcastbonus.com.au, where I'll leave you a range of my ebooks. I'll leave a link in the show notes, but podcastbonus.com.au, and I'd be happy to gift you a wide range of ebooks to help further your investment success. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?